Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first American Ninja Warrior Season 8 Recap Podcast. I am Taryn Armstrong, and I'm with the amazing Lita. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Big week for me. Excited to be back in the podcast. How about you?
Very excited. I was recently in Philadelphia for the Philadelphia regional taping, and it was so much fun. And I'm very, very excited to be podcasting about this season because it's looking to be quite a good one.
Yeah, it's shaping up well. There were a lot of impressive newbies and no veteran flameouts.
Yeah, right? Like, usually you see some major disappointments, and I think we had at least one disappointment, but I think we'll get to that later. What did you think of the new obstacles here?
I feel pretty good about them. I am a little bit nervous going forward, just because one of my big fears about the season was because they didn't have anyone finish for so many seasons, then they had two people finish the final stage last year, that they were going to make it way too hard and they were going to overcorrect and just make it impossible for anyone to do it, which I don't think that they did. They definitely made the qualifying course a little harder, but not too bad. I think that they did a good job correcting just right. I am still a little nervous going forward to see further along how hard they make the courses.
The ring jump, I thought, seemed like very difficult, but it seemed like most people didn't have too much trouble with it. The hard part was just that beginning thing and then making sure you didn't lose your grip on the way down. But it seemed like it was just the right length that people were mostly able to just barely get through it.
Yeah. Yeah. The ring jump looks like a nightmare. is that what they replaced the ring toss with?
Yeah, I imagine so. Yeah. And so, I mean, I was kind of hoping that because people finished, you know, usually in Sasuke, once somebody completes the course and, you know, becomes the grand champion, they do like a total revamp of the entire, all four stages, really. But it seems like they're mostly sticking to similar obstacles in the qualifying stages, maybe just a little bit harder. I'm very curious to see what they do with the main course in Vegas. I'm hoping that they don't stick to the kind of very upper body focused stuff that they have been doing. I really want to see some more like agility based things and lower body stuff. But so far, it seems like they are sticking with the upper body.
Yeah, although they have a new agility one. The escalator is new, right?
Yeah, but they usually have, you know, one of those balance ones.
Yeah.
But I mean, the escalator, it didn't seem like it tripped many people up, but it was kind of, you know, fun to watch.
Yeah, that's one of those obstacles that is the only one in the history of American Ninja Warrior that I'm like, I could maybe do that if the whole obstacle course was just the one escalator.
Yeah.
Like, I could run across those things.
Yeah, I have those moments sometimes where I'm like, I could do that, right?
Yeah.
But then, no.
Most things require the ability to do at least one pull-up.
Yeah.
Jesse Graff's mom would be a lot better off than I am.
Probably. What did you think of the new floating steps?
It didn't seem to make too much of a difference. It seems like if you were comfortable on the triple steps, then you'd be okay on the floating steps. Those things are just more technique. I think the people who fall on those just don't really know how to approach it rather than not being physically able to do it.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, either you slipped for a second and you fell, or you got too ambitious and, you know, try to run on one side of them and fall, as I believe we saw one person do.
Yeah, you could do that on the triple steps. I don't think you can really do the running up one side on the floating steps.
Yeah. All right. So our first competitor was Brennan Mejia. Yes. The Red Power Ranger. What did you think? What did you think when we were introduced to a Power Ranger as our first competitor?
He's really handsome. That's what I thought. and then also I thought, even before he got started, he's the first competitor. He's like, you know, on this TV show, this is going to be like a kind of gimmicky guy who I didn't have too much faith in going far.
Yeah, you know, you know they're in trouble when they're the first up.
Yeah.
But he gets through the new floating steps pretty easily. He just has a problem with the new obstacle, the TikTok. He doesn't grab it with his feet. He just grabs it with his arms and manages to hold on for a really long time. This actually impressed me a lot more than I expected to be impressed by this guy. I think that if he had a little more practice, if he, you know, nailed the technique down, he had the physicality to really do well on here.
Yeah, well, he was a circus performer also. So seeing him hang on for so long, he just dead hanged there for such a long time. And it looked like if he had tried to jump a little bit earlier, he may have had the momentum to do it. He just gassed out, holding onto there forever.
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of competitors were really taking their time with this one, making sure that they were prepared to make those jumps. And it seemed like some of them kind of waited a little too long and lost the momentum to make some of the jumps across. Next up was Tori Garcia. She was a naval officer and mom. She was the one that she made it the furthest of all the women, I believe, in last year's military qualifying round. How did you like Tori?
I am not normally one for kids or children, but she had an incredibly cute kid. That was my takeaway. Anyway, she had perfect technique on the TikTok. It was nice to see someone do that well early so the other competitors can see how you are actually supposed to do that. And really, I mean, she went out the way that I would expect a lot more people went out on the ring jump, where she got up and over the peg, and just the impact from that ring landing on the peg, she just couldn't hold on, which is really understandable. She had that reverse grip, which I don't know helped or hurt her, but the impact from that ring jump, I just can't even imagine.
Yeah, it seemed like the people that were able to hold on to both sides when they reached the apex of that obstacle and then kind of move it down a couple rungs just while holding on to both rings, that seemed like the better technique if you were able to do it, if you had the wingspan. But unfortunately, it didn't seem like either she knew about that technique yet or was capable of it. So she had to make those jumps, and it's a long way down. And if you don't have, you know, vice grip strength, you're going to fall. So down she goes. And, you know, you kind of expect the typical way that they edit it is, you know, somebody falls on one obstacle, then the next person completes that one and then falls on the next one. So next we have Jackson Meyer, the Boy Scout from last season. And I didn't have super high hopes. I figured he was probably going to fall on the next obstacle. And lo and behold.
Am I allowed to say that I hate a contestant? Or is that...
Do you too?
I mean,
I don't hate him, but like...
I can't stand this guy. He said that teaching Christine the scout sign was equivalent to helping an old lady across the street. I'm sure Christine loved that. He really frustrates me. He's like the Lillian Morris of American history. I just can't with him.
Yeah, he's got this, it's kind of weird attitude. You know, it's interesting because, you know, you see the package, and it's kind of like this guy, you know, he's kind of coming off like he's a little full of himself, but, you know, whatever. It could be just the editing. But I actually, you know, while watching him run the course, it's weird because, you know, normally seeing their package, seeing their personality, that's when you kind of see who that person is. But watching him run, I kind of actually started liking him more. Like, it really seemed like he had a lot of determination to do that. And I mean, that's probably why I love this show so much. I love watching the determination on people's faces as they really struggle through these things, and watching him try to get up that I-beam across, I was actually starting to root for him. But then in his interview again, I was like, oh, okay.
He's the only contestant that has an ongoing rivalry with Christine.
Well, if she still can't get this Boy Scout salute done, then, I mean, she had to have known that this was going to be a segment.
Yeah, I mean, I like to see a lot of heart. I agree with you. But I just keep going back to last year when his whole package was about him eating roadkill. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes, now I remember.
Yeah, this was the guy who was like, he found a rabbit and it showed him like,
oh God,
cooking it. Which means that he had to also reenact it for the package. It's not like the American Ninja Warrior people were there when it happened. So this guy has eaten at least two dead already found dead rabbits.
Maybe that gives him his strength. You never know.
I guess. I don't know. I just can't think about anything else when I watch him. I don't want to make enemies with any of the contestants, though. He was good. he had a lot of heart, a lot of determination.
All right. Well, speaking of contestants that we might dislike, next up was Chad Sorrells. And this was actually really interesting for me, and I think for you as well, where like we get a package from him that really kind of sets him up for failure. He says he's got abs, he's got hair, he's got it all going on.
With porn music in the background.
Yeah. So what were you thinking watching this package from, you know, so to speak, from Chad Sorrells?
Well, he started with "I love waking up early," so I already didn't have anything in common with him. I don't know. I mean, I'm not used to them doing anything with editing that will lead us to believe anything about them. You know, a lot of the time we get really really glowing packages for people who got early and no packages at all for people who finished. So I wasn't really expecting this, but you know, when I was seeing it, I was like, wow, I really hope this guy falls on the first step, which he did. So obviously the editors, that's what they wanted us to think. And I guess I'm not used to looking for that stuff. So I was a little bit surprised.
Yeah, maybe we might be entering the era of the winner's edit on,
oh my God,
on American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah. Also, I was watching with my mom at this point, and when he fell, she said, there is justice in the world. So, not a big fan.
Yeah, they did a great job there. Like, I mean, I too was like, oh man, that's just so perfect that he fell there after. And especially, like, even the announcers were like, man, all the women in attendance are rooting for this guy. Like all right.
It's not like he's that good looking.
Maybe it's just the horses. Your proximity to horses makes you like that much more good looking.
Maybe. I don't know. he doesn't have like a model face or anything. And he was saying the stuff with his Fabio hair and his abs
or
whatever.
Well, apparently the girls like his abs more than his hair. So,
you know, we already have the Cowboy Ninja. That's the thing. Like, we don't need more of these people.
Well, I guess we won't have more because, yeah, he fell on the floating steps. So next up, this was my biggest disappointment of the night. Tiana Weberly, who was on Team Ninja Warrior with Flip Rodriguez, who is her trainer. I had really high hopes for her. It seemed like she was even stronger than she was when we saw her on Team Ninja Warrior. What did you think of Tiana?
I really love her. I remember her from Team Ninja Warrior. She's a waitress at Outback, so Sandra would be a fan. And I mean, she's 5'3" and she can bench 200 pounds. That's
more than I can bench.
I'm 5'3" and I've never even tried to bench anything like my cat, but I can guarantee it's not 200 pounds. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't a huge disappointment. She got really close at the end there.
Yeah, she did. She did really well. And I feel like if she had just, like Matt Nachbar kind of said, if she had gone backwards, I feel like she probably could have made it. And that's part of why it's so disappointing.
Yeah, she definitely did not benefit from being the first to attempt that obstacle. I really, this might be a preemptive call. I really think she's going to be a wild card.
I hope so. Yeah, I think she deserves it. I think that she's a really strong competitor. And if anybody's going to get a wild card, it should be somebody like her. I think she came pretty close to qualifying, even though she went out here for the finals. But yeah, it's unfortunate that she failed, but I think she still showed how strong she is.
Yeah, and she's been up the warped wall in Team Ninja Warrior, not the new one, but you know, she's showed that she has that. I think Team Ninja Warrior is really good for that, for showcasing people who maybe don't get a proper chance on the real course.
Yeah, definitely. So next up was Steve Seaver. He's a military vet. This is kind of our first big like sob story package that we got.
Yeah, surprising we got this far without one.
Yeah, right. I think they did a pretty good job here actually with the sob story kind of thing, where because it seemed a little more spaced out, it seemed less frequent in this episode. This actually really like got to me, and I was really pulling for this guy a bit. He was in the military for a long time. He was deployed, but when he came back, his wife had left him. He turned to alcohol, but, you know, kind of got on his feet, wanted to prove to his kids that you can come back from rock bottom, and did really well here.
Yeah. And I also love seeing yoga people doing this because we don't see a ton of that. So it was cool to see someone from a little bit of a different athletic discipline to do that.
You a big yogi?
Yeah. That's like the closest thing to a sport that I do.
Did Vitas tell you to go, or was it on
your own? This guy kind of looked like Vitas and had like the same story.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like recovering through yoga.
Yeah, something I noticed that he did that kind of allowed him to succeed on the I-beam where Tiana had failed was he was able to keep his feet locked onto that little 1-inch ledge toward the end of the I-beam. And I think that's something that we saw almost everybody who completed the I-beam do. It's hard to get your feet up there because the ledge is so small, but the people that are able to do that, it seemed like they were really able to do it well. Unfortunately, he's just short on the warped wall, but that won't stop him from qualifying for the finals round.
Yeah, and being the first to face the new warped wall ever.
Yeah. All right. So next was Clifton Graves. He's a pharmaceutical sales rep. We kind of skipped over the first part of his run, but I think they kind of just wanted to get it in here because I even wrote this down in my notes before Matt said anything, because this is totally my original thought and Matt copied me, but he looks just like Clark Kent. And this is clearly why they wanted to show him, just because he looks like Clark Kent.
Because then when he did anything well, they could say, he's not Clark Kent, he's Superman.
Yeah, exactly.
I do like to see a guy go out there in glasses, although he lost them when when he fell into the water. But you don't see people wearing glasses.
Yeah, when he lost them, I was like, yeah, you know, maybe that's why you don't wear glasses on the course. But
or maybe it keeps you motivated to not fall.
Exactly. And it got him a little bit of screen time. So, you know, who's to fault him?
Also, they mentioned he went to Penn State, which is the state school here in Pennsylvania where most of my friends go.
Interesting.
So it's weird that he was at the LA tryouts. But.
Yeah, they kind of move him around in weird ways. Who knows how their system works?
I mean, some of them go to all... Casey Catanzaro is at every single one. Like, these people just, like, travel anywhere to watch these things and to try out.
Yeah, and that's something that I really enjoy about this show is that the athletes are so supportive of each other. They, you know, even when they're not competing, they go and hang out and cheer on their fellow athletes. And so great to see.
I have a question related to this that you might know. Do they like tell certain people to audition in certain places? Because like you don't want to get a situation where like all the big names are auditioning in the same cities.
Well, they take the audition tapes and it doesn't really matter. You don't like apply for a certain place. You just send in the audition tape and they tell you where to go.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you chose where you could try out. Okay.
Yeah. I'm sure some of them would like that. Less traveling involved in some instances. But yeah, they have to, they do the spacing themselves to make sure that they have the right, you know, combination of athletes for each episode, I imagine. Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. So the only people where it really matters are the walk-ons.
Yep. So next up was Nick Hansen, the Eskimo. What do you think of Nick Hansen?
It's interesting that we had the Island Ninja and the Eskimo Ninja. I wonder if they have beef. I don't know. He was really good. I like to see people, you know, who are passionate about representing their culture, having some diversity. He won 2 golds at the World Arctic Games, which I wasn't even aware of.
Yeah, I didn't know that existed.
Yeah. How many Arctic countries are there?
I don't know.
Got to be Greenland and Alaska.
You're exposing my ignorance here.
Yeah. Part of Canada. I don't know. I'll have to check with Haley.
Does Canada count?
If they have some Arctic, they're north. But yeah, I mean, first finisher, obviously amazing. I didn't actually remember him from last season. Did he get a lot of screen time?
He did actually. Yeah. I remember really liking him last year and pretty bummed when he got cut just before the cutoff. So really great to see him do well here.
Oh, right. He was 31 out of... Yeah, he was 31 and only the top 30 advanced.
Yep.
Right. I do remember.
But this time he manages to clear the whole course and he's our first clear. And I'm very excited to see what he can do moving forward.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, you know, nothing too crazy. The crowd chanting Eskimo was probably the highlight of his run.
One of the more specific chants we've seen.
Yeah. But next up is Nolan Gardner, the special education aide. He was born deaf, but got a cochlear implant and was a swimmer. What did you think of Nolan?
This is the season or the episode where like everyone works with kids, right?
Yeah. Like, lots of kids. Yeah.
Yeah. There were children in like every single package we saw. All of them were like starting after school programs and stuff. But anyway, this guy is actually a teacher, so that's not quite the same. But yeah, I mean, he was really strong. Again, I like to see people representing some sort of diversity. I'm glad that they showed us all that they did about him. He seems like a really nice guy. And he made pretty much the same mistake that Tiana Weberly made, right?
Well, he lost his grip on the ring jump, didn't he?
Oh, right. Right, Tiana was on the I-beam, but yep. The same thing happened where it's like they got right to the end.
Yeah.
Couldn't make the dismount.
Yep. Yeah, nothing too crazy here. Again, this is kind of one of the special, you know, sob story kind of packages. But again, like I was pulling for this guy. But next up was Natalie Duran, the YouTuber. She was on Team Ninja Warrior, and I think she clearly has a lot of potential.
Oh yeah, and she's a professional rock climber now. She just started doing that, so she's her arms. they're great. She has Meghan Martin arms.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, she was a teammate of Grant McCartney on Team Ninja Warrior, so they showed a lot of camaraderie between them.
Yeah, definitely an interesting pair, those two. Yeah. Big personalities.
Yeah, definitely.
But she falls just short on the warped wall, just barely unable to clear this course. And she definitely would have cleared this if it had been last year's, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. She made the I-beam look easier than anybody has so far.
Oh, yeah.
She really did not look like she had very much trouble at all.
Yeah, I'm sure that was her rock climbing skills really coming in handy there.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so next up is Grant McCartney. He's the flight attendant, and we got plenty of references to that throughout his package and run. I like Grant McCartney. I think he's an interesting character, and he's very good at this course.
Yeah, not as good at dancing.
You know, I thought he was doing okay when they were showing him in the, like, oh, Grant's coming up. He's preparing by dancing. I was like, all right, you know, he's kind of, you know, just dancing out. But on the top of that warped wall, it was like five different, like, half completed dance moves.
Yeah. He dabbed to hit the buzzer, which is a choice, I guess. I don't think he learned that dancing from his very southern father, who's always there and is like the most stoic person in the world. So it's always weird to see them next to each other.
I mean, I guess that's how it goes. So Matt Nachbar had some interesting things to say during his run that I wrote down because I thought in particular they were really having fun with this one. I believe during the ring jump, Matt said, "This is carry on. You're not checking this bag, baby."
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure even makes much sense.
Makes no sense.
And when he, I think it was when he was on the I-beam and his feet slipped. And like, wow, the athletic prowess that it took to get his feet back on there. And like when they showed the slow-mo replay, his face was just like all contorted as he like, oh man, it was incredible. I don't even know how he did that.
Yeah.
But I believe I think it was when that happened, Akbar was like, "You big drink of water, you big drink of water."
Yeah. And also he was yelling that when Grant used his chin to give his arms a break on the I-beam, which was crazy to like, hold on with your face that looked so painful.
Yeah. This was definitely one of the better runs of the night, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like just the way that he was able to get across on that I-beam, you know, he's a big guy and it takes a lot of grip strength to hold all of that weight up there. But he manages to do it and he clears the course.
Yeah. And they also said that he had been traveling in India and got sick and didn't know if he could compete. That's pretty scary.
Yeah. I can't even imagine like these poor athletes who train like year round to do this competition. And then they've got one shot at it. And if they happen to be sick or if they, you know, if they injure themselves at the wrong time, then that's it for a whole year. You know, and that must be terrifying.
Yeah. I mean, that's another good thing about having all these specials with the Team Ninja Warrior and the All-Stars and stuff like that is that if you miss one, you at least get to do something. It's not the big one, but gives more opportunities.
Definitely.
Can we talk about his dad at the end?
Yes, we can.
So he goes down to Christine and his dad, and Christine asks his dad like what he thinks, if he's proud of him or whatever. And his dad says, "Life's a banquet. Most people are starving and he's eaten." What is that? He's starving here.
Yeah, that was probably one of the strangest compliments you could make about your son. Like,
yeah, and then Grant just like laughs and like makes an eating gesture, like he pretends like he's eating as if it's just like something that makes any sense.
Yeah, like, yeah, totally. I am eating. Yes,
exactly. Look at all these other starving people.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, especially considering, you know, there are people starving and the fact that, like, you don't want to be bragging about the fact that you're eating, right? Like,
yeah, those people aren't winning American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah. yeah, definitely an interesting family there. But yeah, I'm a big fan of Grant. I hope we see a lot more of him.
Yeah, he and Natalie are definitely people that I love to watch on TV. I'm not sure how much I would love to hang out with them.
Too much.
So high energy.
Yeah, I could probably agree with that. You know, I like seeing people when they're really having fun with it. You know, I love the determination and I love the like seriousness of people who like are really, really trying. But, you know, with someone like Grant, like he's having fun with it. But then you also see those moments of like deep determination when he's on the I-beam and he slips and he manages to pull himself back up. So it's I really enjoy seeing these people that are able to, you know, attack the course with a high energy and lots of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next up is Sean Bryan. He was the Catholic school worker. He was
papal ninja.
Yes, the papal ninja. And I have to say, I did not expect him to do particularly well. I figured this guy, you know, he's here because this is an interesting kind of story. What did you think?
Yeah, well, the nickname is kind of weird. There's only one pope. He's not studying to be the pope, so the papal ninja is weird. But yeah, I mean, they showed clips of him, you know, in the gym that he built in the monastery or wherever
that,
he was.
That he didn't ask permission to build, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, the stuff that they were showing of him being a gymnast was pretty impressive. He also kind of looks like Ian Dory, like his face.
A little bit.
Maybe that helped him. but yeah, I agree. Like he definitely looked strong, but I did think that this was a little bit of a gimmick package.
I noticed at the end of his package, he was doing the, what was it? The cross thing that,
the Iron Cross.
Yeah. The Iron Cross that I don't remember who it was, but it was somebody on the European team for USA versus the world was talking about. Yeah. Like very, so I was like, okay, this is apparently a very difficult thing to do. And he's doing that. And, he also had those arm sleeves that I thought looked kind of cool, actually. I was like, oh man, he looks kind of badass there. but yeah, he dominates this course. He clears it with the fastest time up to that point. He went feet first on the I-beam, but yeah, made it anyway. Didn't matter at all to him. He had plenty in there. So yeah, I was very surprised at how well he did.
Yeah, he made the warped wall look really easy. Mm-hmm. No trouble for the papal ninja.
Yeah, I think we'll be seeing a lot of him. Hopefully a lot more of the outfits as well in his fan base.
Yeah. Did he bring a bunch of priests with him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Another question for you. How did all these people manage to bring like 20, like a whole crew of people? Can they fit that many, or do they rotate audience members?
That it's interesting. They do. They rotate out. So when I was in Philadelphia, there's basically a big line. And, you know, they call up family members to come and watch their, you know, athlete, and they'll have them, you know, on the sidelines cheering them on and following them through the course if they get that far. And I don't think that it's not like a situation where they have to leave or anything. But in general, the shoot takes pretty much all night. So there's a constant rotation of audience members.
OK, yeah, because every single person, it was like, this guy brought 20 priests and there are 20 Boy Scouts and the zookeeper brought the herd of lions, like a pride of lions. But yeah, they all had so many people, and I was like, the stadium doesn't look that big. So that's interesting to know.
Yeah, most of the family members are usually like only interested in seeing their own person run. So after that, they feel fine to leave. And I saw a lot of disappointed family members leaving the the taping. Yeah. But yes, so after this, we have the Harry Potter segment.
Oh, good. I was so scared you were going to skip this. It's so important.
What was this? It came out of nowhere.
Matt Eisman is just at Harry Potter World in Los Angeles, which he made a toast to Dumbledore, which I was like, why did they? It was so weird. And like, I didn't realize that it was at Universal Studios. I've only been to the Harry Potter World in Florida. And so Matt was like, oh, it's so cool to be at the place where they filmed the movies. And I was like, is this guy a moron? Like, this isn't actually Hogwarts. And I was like, oh, right. Like, they physically did it at the studio.
Yeah, who knew? Who knew Matt Eisman was such a big Harry Potter fan?
Such a Potterhead.
Yeah.
Where was Akbar? Also, just I have so many questions. What are they promoting? They didn't mention the Harry Potter movie that's coming out this summer.
Is there a Harry Potter movie coming out this summer?
Yeah, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
I don't even know what that means.
Karen. It's like a spin-off type deal.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah, but, well, exactly. They didn't even mention it. That's what I thought. That's where I thought it was going. But they were just, Matt was just having a great time. He loves candy. He loves magical candy.
It seemed to me like maybe this was like, yes, you can use our space at these studios, but you have to do a segment to promote it at some point. So
I will say I was a little mad at this towards the end that this segment happened, because they came back from a commercial break at one point. And they were like, while you were gone, three people finished the course. And I was like, I would have liked to see that.
Yeah, especially
time, because Matt Eisman has to go to Honeydukes.
And you know, you said Akbar, you know, wasn't there, but he did say that he wished he had gone. So,
yeah, can't leave Akbar out of fun day trips.
And I do want to say Matt Eisman, also a big Brother fan. So he's clearly got good taste.
Yeah. Well, where is Christine? Why didn't she want to go?
You know, she's got more important things to do than hang out with Harry Potter.
She's got to learn how to do the scout sign.
Yeah. She has to study. Okay. But yes, as you mentioned, we come back from this segment sort of thing to see that Nicholas Coolidge and Ben Mielek, the Tarzan guy, both were, you know, pretty big parts of last season. And they both were skipped over despite clearing the course.
Yeah, well, they had more important things to show, clearly.
Yep, pretty much. not much more to say about that. You know, they got montaged. And next up, the person that I guess was more important, even though I did like his story, it really did touch me to some extent. Mike Burke, the safari park manager, who lost his wife to breast cancer.
Yeah. There's no way for me to say anything without being insensitive. It was good. It was nice. It was well done. I was just going to say it was a great story. What I was going to say is that they did make it a little bit obvious that he wasn't going to do well.
Oh yeah. It was,
which is like maybe better.
Yeah. It was one of those things where they were like, it's such an inspiration that he's here.
Like just making it through one obstacle is,
yeah.
You know, for some people that's winning. He was another person who brought like a whole entourage of people to see him do it. And I do like that they do these where they give people a chance, even if they kind of know that it's not going to pan out. But I think that they were laying it on a little bit thick with the, came off a little condescending at a certain point to me.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like, just one obstacle is, you know, that's winning. Like, I don't know. He's a capable looking man.
Yeah. Yeah. He was very in shape for his age, but yeah, for the most part, I think I do like that they give opportunities to people. And they do the same thing in Sasuke, where there are a lot of people who come almost every year and you know that they're going to fail. Like there's Octopus Man, whatever his name was, who always fails on like the first obstacle. But it's just fun to see them try. And so I can appreciate that aspect. And I feel like we'll probably get Nicholas Coolidge and Ben Mielek. We'll probably get them in the finals. At least we better, because I think they're both pretty great. But yeah, I can appreciate that, you know, this is the qualifying rounds. We're going to see some people who are here because they have an interesting story and they're going to make it a couple obstacles. And that's fine with me.
Yeah. And I mean, that's become so much of a part of the culture of the show. There was an SNL skit about it recently. Yeah. I don't know if you saw that. Yeah. Where it's a guy with a really tragic story. His whole town was destroyed by a tornado and he just fails miserably.
Yeah, that segment was so spot on.
In the rubble from his city, yeah. That was destroyed, yeah. Yeah, I mean, what would the show be without these pat on the back runs?
So then we got a couple more montage clears. Gabe Hurtado, the shoe salesman, and Chris Workman, an app developer. They both cleared, but we didn't see it.
Yeah, and Chris Workman had the fastest time of the night.
Yep, up to that point.
He didn't show us.
But then we get Flip Rodriguez, who is one of my favorites. You know, personally, I liked the mask. I'm sad that it's gone, but I love that Flip is doing really well. We get a whole segment about his tadpoles. I feel like this has been kind of Flip's story throughout the entirety of his American Ninja Warrior career has been, ever since the first one, it's always been like he really is an inspiration to kids. And I think it's partly because, you know, the kids like the mask and like they like Flip. He loves working with kids and training them, and I think it's really cool.
Yeah, he was the original, like, I work with kids ninja.
Yep.
Now everybody's got got a group of kids that they bring.
Yeah, everybody's got their token kid.
Yeah. Well, I like that he doesn't wear the mask anymore. He's very handsome. I was watching All Stars with my friend who doesn't really watch the show, and the first time she saw him, she was like, "He's my favorite. He looks nice, and his name is Flip, and he has a handsome face." And I was like, "Yeah, that's a good enough reason for me."
Well, there you go. Yeah. He's the real, what was it? Chad Soros. He's the real one that all the women in the audience were rooting for.
Yeah. He looked like he was taking a little bit more time than usual.
Oh yeah, definitely. Especially compared to like 2 years ago when, he used to really just like speed through the course, and he had that unfortunate situation where, you know, his pants dipped in the water.
Yeah.
And ever since then, he's, you know, the story has been, you know, he's matured. He's taking it a little slower, making sure that he gets through. But you could tell as he was going down the I-beam that he was like, OK, I need to step it into gear if I want the fastest time. And so he just like walks it down on his fingers at the end just to make sure that he gets there in time. And he manages to get the fastest time by 1 second.
Yep. And he makes sure that he wears tighter shorts now.
Yes.
Pants. I don't remember exactly what pants he was wearing. But
yeah, there were those like weird like drop crotch things.
They were not saggy basketball shorts, and that's what's important.
Then we get a couple more montaged people.
Three finishers during the break.
Yes. Josh Levin, who is an engineering student, and Brian Kretsch, who unfortunately, like, he's a serious veteran. He's, I think, competed in almost every competition and really never gets a spotlight, and he really deserves it because he's a really great competitor and he's really invested in the sport, and I really think that he should be highlighted more. But unfortunately, he clears and is montaged. And then Ted Jung, who is a banker and wore a pink tutu.
Yeah, I mean, if that guy gets montaged, then Brian Kretsch needs a serious gimmick to get some free time.
Yeah. And next up was Jesse Graff. Yes. One of my favorites.
Yeah, definitely one of my favorites. Probably a top three for me. I love her so much.
Yeah. So how did you like your segment with her mom?
It made me feel bad for not being nearly as in shape as Jesse Graff's mother. Yeah. I mean, it was amazing. And she was talking about how she feels stronger than she did last year. Jesse Graff, not her mother, but probably both. And I was noticing that too. She's just looking at her stomach. It was more cut than it was last year. Just her whole body, everything.
She's incredible. Yeah.
Stronger. And I mean, she was already a specimen, not to say that she wasn't last year, but she really looks like she's put a ton of work in.
Yeah. It's just watching her even just like move is just like, I'm in awe and like in love also. So,
I love that she wears the Wonder Woman outfit too.
Yeah.
And I feel like she's, I mean, this is true of all the Ninja Warrior women, that they're all, you know, super supportive of each other. But I always remember last year, I think it was, they asked her like, so you're the only woman at this finals course. Like, how does that feel? And instead of her being like, it feels great, she was like, well, you know, I wish that there were more women here.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's awesome. Like to really hope that other women are there with you.
Yeah, definitely. But here's the real question. Do you prefer the Wonder Woman outfit to the chicken costume? Wore, the first time she competed, she wore the chicken costume, right?
Oh my God. I totally forgot about that. That's one of those things that's like when you don't know who someone is when they first appear. Like don't register in your memory as the same person. Wow. Well, she does stunts on Supergirl and wears the Wonder Woman outfit. I wonder if she does stunts on, like, I don't know, what's a farm show?
I don't know.
Like, I should have been able to come up with one, but I didn't. Yeah, wow. It seems like the Wonder Woman outfit would probably be better for competition.
Probably, yeah.
A little bit easier to move in.
Here's something though. She clears the course. She makes it up the warped wall. I think it's time to retire. History is made, right?
Yeah. They're getting into that thing where like they were announcing Tiana Weberly and it was like the fifth woman to ever make it up the warped wall. And I was like, when do we stop counting?
Yeah.
Because at a certain point, it just gets to be like, you know, okay, the 17th woman. Does it still matter?
Yes. And then another thing I noticed during the episode was David Campbell on the sidelines cheering her on. Interesting thing to note about David Campbell was that he was not invited back this season.
Whoa, really?
Yes.
That's so weird because he was on All Stars.
Exactly. And so I think he was actually in the walk-on line for this city trying to get on and didn't make it on. So he stayed to cheer on some of his fellow competitors. Hopefully we'll see him in a future city. But yeah, there were some interesting decisions made for not inviting people back.
Might be time for a midlife crisis for the Godfather. That's really disheartening.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if it's maybe, I feel like the show has really blown up in the last couple of years. Maybe they're trying to make it a lot more about who's commercially appealing.
Yeah.
Than, who's actually good at this.
Yeah. And poor David Campbell is just like this normal, like very chill dude. He's always been one of my favorites. I love David Campbell so much from way back in the early days when it was just like, you know, him and Levi and Brian Orozco. Yeah, I would be very disappointed if we didn't get to see more David Campbell in the future.
Yeah, I mean, when you're not letting the guy that you literally call the godfather of the sport play, must be some serious production changes going on.
Yeah. And then finally, the last one of the night, we got Kevin Bull. I love Kevin Bull.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
He works with kids now.
Yes, he also works with kids. Got a whole segment on working with kids.
Kids with alopecia.
Yes, it's the CAP project, which I think is what is like children's
alopecia.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's really great that he's doing this. I think I read that he's working with some sort of company where he's getting sponsored. I think he's starting to like actually make a living off of being an athlete on American Ninja Warrior, which is pretty fantastic because generally these athletes don't make much from their appearances.
Isn't he like a stock trader?
Yes.
I feel like he might not be the one that I would pick to be like, good for this guy. He's making more money.
Well, I don't know. Nothing wrong with being a stock trader.
No, I just mean, I feel like there are a lot of people who aren't making money.
Yeah. Like his poor James McGrath, who, you know, has a different job every season.
Yeah, he might not be be one of the people who's starving at Grant McCartney's dad's.
Yes. we see Kevin Bull. He almost slips on the floating steps. He gets a little too aggressive.
Yeah, he like rockets.
Oh, yeah.
Through the first part of through the whole course. But
yeah, he has like a very intense energy about him when he competes, which is always fun to watch. And he clears with the fastest time.
By 20 seconds. Which is wild. And I'm really glad for him because he came off of not a very good performance in the USA versus the world.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to see him off to a really good start here.
Definitely. And that's everybody, except for, I believe on the leaderboard, we see Alan Keneally and Jesse, LaFleur were also competitors here. They also cleared the course, but we didn't even see them in a montage.
Didn't even get montaged.
Yeah. And Alan Keneally, like he's been on like almost every season, like as a, you know, a featured competitor, and Jesse LaFleur is a huge name. Very interesting that we didn't even see them montaged.
Yeah. Well, we can look forward to Matt Eisman doing stupid things in every city, maybe. Do you know if he took a little vacation in Philadelphia, if we're going to get a package of him at the Liberty Bell?
No, but I can say that Matt Eisman was really fantastic in Philadelphia. Like he spent a lot of time talking to fans, like handing out like little sticker things to kids. And like he's, I really love Matt Eisman, even though he sometimes goes on Harry Potter segments.
That was not really his fault, probably.
Yeah, he's such a great guy, and like he has such a passion for this show and everything, and like super super nice. So yeah,
we should podcast his HGTV show next.
I wasn't aware of this. What is his HDTV show?
It's what he did before he did this.
Okay.
Like a couple of years ago, he had a show on HDTV. I don't even know what it's called, but that's what I knew him from.
Interesting.
I was like, oh, that's that guy from that show about houses when I first started watching this show. So
all right,
I have to go back and rewatch it if you love Matt Heisman.
Absolutely. Next on my list. that was the episode for the Universal Studios qualifying round. What'd you think overall?
I thought it was good. I thought it was exciting. You know, I've made my critiques clear that I wish we had seen more people that did really well. I thought that there were no, you know, majorly disappointing women. All the women showed up. I'm a little bit tired of them saying, is this the year of the woman? Because they've said it every year for like 3 or 4 years, which, like, you know, I'm about, but at a certain point it loses its meaning. And as I said at the beginning, there were no super veteran flameouts, and I like that the editors were having a little bit of fun with some of the packages. So yeah, overall, a really strong start. How about you?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah, pretty much the same thing. I was happy to see, you know, nothing, you know, no major upsets. Yeah, it was cool to see. Yeah, again, like two women qualifying for the finals, and they're both pretty great. So I'm excited to see that happen. And yeah, looking forward to the next one. So I think another thing that we should talk about is the All-Star special that aired on Sunday, I believe.
Yeah, I'm happy, as I've mentioned, that they're doing more and more stuff.
Yeah.
And that everybody, you know, the whole A-team shows up for all these things, even though it's not for like prize money or anything. They just love to do these.
Yeah. And it's super interesting to see, just like to be able to see them do other, cause you know, this show, they get one shot and then if they fall, they're out and that's it. That's all you get to see of them. So really awesome to get to see them do some of this stuff in different circumstances and different kinds of things. So yeah, I believe this was recorded the night after the USA versus the World competition. So this was like just a couple days after Isaac and Jeff scaled the tower. Yeah, so very interesting. What did you think of the Matt versus Akbar team kind of thing?
I mean, that's fine. I don't think it would have made very much of a difference if they were just like, here's team one and team two. I don't know that the rivalry between Matt and Akbar really added much to it, but I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I felt like I enjoyed it at first, especially watching Joe Morovsky, who is one of my favorites.
Oh yeah,
totally dominate the second stage. Like that is one of the most impressive runs I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, they even asked just like, him, like, do you think that anyone's going to be able to top that? And he was like, I don't think so.
Yeah, very honest, right?
Yeah. He was just like, I don't think anyone can do that.
Yeah, like, and I don't think anybody could. He was just like, he's so in the zone, like every single obstacle that just made it through it. I was really excited to see that. But for the most part, this felt a little too similar to USA versus the World to me. Just, you know, seeing the second stage a few different times. And then, I mean, it was definitely interesting to see some of the competitors who don't usually make it to the third and fourth stage be able to compete there. So seeing Jesse Graf take on the third stage, that was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the most part, I felt like this could have been a little shorter. but I did actually like the Matt versus Akbar thing. It was interesting to see like the stakes being much less high and getting to see them joke around and stuff. That I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it felt a little forced, maybe, is how I felt about it.
Yeah.
And also, I don't know if I really like bought that these guys sat down and drafted their teams. You know, I feel like the teams are probably split up and then assigned to one of them.
Yeah, probably.
I didn't really feel like they put that much effort into picking their teams, you know, for themselves. But I mean, the teams were fair. It was fun. It was also kind of weird, like, when they were doing the commentary, you know, if it was, like, someone on Team Matt, and Matt was like, oh, great transition there, and Akbar would be like, it was okay, I guess. It's like, okay, this is, like, really getting old.
But, yeah, I think another one of the takeaways was Flip really going up that rope for the final stage really quickly. Not something I would have expected him to be able to do.
Yeah, I mean, he had a really great night on All-Stars.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure, but I think he would have at least come close to completing that if it had been in actual competition with the time he got.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously he dominated the skills competition.
Yes. So the skills competition, that was, I enjoyed this a lot more. I thought, this was a lot of fun. I almost wish that the more athletes had been able to compete in each of these things, because it was really interesting to be able to see them do like these giant oversized obstacles. Really fun to see.
Yeah. And one thing that I do want to say about the first part before we get to the skills competition is that I really liked the way that they did the teams. It was five people and there had to be one woman and one rookie.
Yeah.
I think that's really a good way to do it, to make sure that a lot of people get a chance.
Yeah, definitely. And I liked the composition for the most part. I believe we didn't get to see Jeff compete at all because he was still... I think he had to make the decision for like whether he competed or not, like early in that morning. And he was still sick from last night when he wasn't able to compete in the USA versus the world. So we saw him in the audience. I think he was feeling better, but he had decided he was still sick at the time he had to decide and wasn't able to compete. So unfortunate that we didn't get to see Jeff.
Yeah. Story of Jeff's life. Unfortunate.
Yeah, poor Jeff. So yeah, but the skill competition, was there one of these that was your favorite?
Oh, definitely the Isaac and Drew Dreschel showdown.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, it was cool to see Megan Martin do the first round too, to give it a shot. But yeah, I couldn't believe it. That's the most amazing thing I've ever seen on American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah, Drew is just incredible. And I think that if they could have kept pushing that thing back and he would have kept nailing it every single time. I think that he could have beat Isaac.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's my pick to be the next person to finish the whole thing. Maybe not this season, but I think that calling it now, the next person to beat Mount Midoriaba will be him.
I could definitely get on board with that. Drew has always been one of my favorites. He's been on the show. He's been here since very early on, and he's always improving, always super impressive. Super excited to see what he's going to do this season.
Yeah, and there was a really cute gif going around Twitter of them putting the medals on each other. They tied, so they both got a medal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty incredible. Probably that and the warped wall were the most fun to watch for me.
Yes, the warped wall was a lot of fun. Great to see Joe. You know, you look at Joe and it's just like, how is he gonna get up this wall? Like he's not necessarily ripped like Flip is, but he's so good at this. It's incredible. I think like the level of skill he has is just out of this world.
Yeah, I was talking about to my friend that I was watching it with. I wonder if the weatherman ever gets frustrated by still having a dad bod despite being like a perfect athlete. Like he looks great, don't get me wrong. He's just not one of these 0% body fat people, and it's just so interesting to see the differences in body type between, like, you know, there's some guys who are, you know, close to Joe Moravsky's level who are much more cut, but there he is just blazing through these courses and up the warped wall, and he just doesn't, you wouldn't see him at the beach and think that guy is an athlete necessarily.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's one of the things I think I like about him is that, like, you know, he seems, even though he's clearly like on another level, but he seems like, especially when he's just got like a t-shirt on, he seems just like a regular everyday person, but he just dominates, which is much more akin to the Sasuke thing where the people that compete on Sasuke are, you know, also like, you know, they just look like normal people for the most part, at least, but they're able to do incredible things. And it's something I really, really like about Joe. But we also see Flip here just like dominate this wall.
Yeah. I mean, I like to see Flip Rodriguez succeed.
Yeah.
He's just, he is such a like nice person, and he's so mild, like mild mannered.
Until he gets to the top of that wall.
Well, but they always show him like listening to music when he's prepping, you know, yeah. He's not like out there doing, I don't know, doing the nay-nay or whatever. He's always just, he seems to kind of keep to himself, and he's really passionate about working with these kids and stuff. So, you know, he's just one of those people that's clearly not in it for the celebrity or for money or anything like that.
Yeah. We also saw the pegboard. I, you know, knowing what I know about poor David Campbell not being asked back, I was kind of hoping for him to win this. And even though he came in second, really, just like, just totally kind of under the rug for poor David Campbell. He did so well. And I feel like if he had won, maybe a little more spotlight would have been on him and maybe he would have been asked back, but still very impressive what he did.
Yeah. I mean, impressive from everyone. There was no one who really looked silly on. I mean, there was no one who did on any of these, but this was one where it seems like you could have embarrassed yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, if you missed one of those pegs, you could theoretically fall. Yep. And that would have been really embarrassing. Who else did we see on that?
That was the one that Jesse Graff did, right?
Yeah.
Or am I wrong?
And was it Brent Stephenson?
Brent, I believe, did the jump hang cargo net thing, right?
Oh, maybe. I did not pay as much attention to the jump hang cargo net one because by comparison, that one looked way less impressive.
Yeah, they kind of sped through it.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of like the same thing as the little ledge hang that Isaac and Drew did, except a much bigger surface to grab. And I know that the distance was further. It didn't translate on TV. It didn't look nearly as hard as the other ones.
Yeah. And I think part of it was that like it ended with both people failing, which wasn't as exciting. So they were like, let's just kind of skip through this.
Yeah. They both still get the medals, but not quite as.
Yeah. But honestly, I think perhaps the most impressive thing was Mike Bernardo on that salmon ladder, getting all the way to the top. Like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I mean, he's not one of the people that, comes to mind when you think like the biggest all-stars. You know, he doesn't have the biggest name on the marquee for this special, at least for me.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've always loved Mike, him and Ryan Stratus. They're two of the people that have been here, from the beginning. They kind of signed on because they loved Sasuke and, they watched Ninja Warrior on G4 and, I love how involved they are with that and their deep appreciation for the show and its history and its roots. And I love the little kind of nod they do to, Makoto Nagano with the backslap and the yells and all of that. I love those guys.
Yeah, so it was really cool to see him go to the top of that. Was a little disappointed in Casey Catanzaro's performance, but in the grand scheme of things, she still did, four of the normal salmon ladder?
I think she made it to, 12 or 11, so...
Oh, so
so maybe almost three.
Yeah.
Still
really impressive.
Yeah, that's still about three more salmon ladders than I can do, and about eight more rungs than I could manage. So
yeah, she went 12. It's probably 12 more rungs than I can do. So, but that's why we podcast about it.
Oh yeah,
those who can't do podcasts.
All right, so I believe that's all we have. This has been a lot of fun. I can't wait to see the next episode and talk about it. Hopefully in the future we'll have some guests that we'll bring on to talk about their experience doing the course, or maybe just guests that can talk about it. So thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks guys.
And if you like this podcast, feel free to let us know on Twitter. I am at @ArmstrongTaren and Lita is at @news_intern. See you next time.